Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Josh Brown, I've had 5 hours sleep. I still haven't finished Final Fantasy IV, but I did give it a good go. I can barely see you right now.
You've got a sickness, man. Yep. Like, you need to get some sleep. You need to stop playing all of these Final Fantasy games and trying to replay Final Fantasy 16 so you can get the Platinum Trophy. What's that about?
Listen, I'll tell you what it's about. It's about loving something and it needing to express that love. I platinum Final Fantasy VII. I didn't platinum the Integrate thing because I'm not insane, but I'm going to platinum Final Fantasy XVI. I want you to do one more run through it, but I finished Final Fantasy VI. I've almost finished Final Fantasy IV. I saw the Final Fantasy Orchestra. What else do you want from me?
I appreciate it. I'm the same. I love loving stuff, but you got to love yourself as well. You got to make sure you look after yourself. After, as someone who did 10 hours on Final Fantasy XVI yesterday, it feels like just dirt today. It feels like rubbish. And I didn't even go to bed that late. I'm just like, man, need to take some breaks. Need to get some water in you.
Some games don't work for big shift stints. I remember doing this with Metal Gear Solid 5 Phantom Pain, pulling 12-hour shifts to get through that thing. And I was loving every minute of it. And I love Final Fantasy 16, I think, a lot more than you. But it's one of those things where certain games, I don't know, there's something about the structures of them, the mission design, the mechanics or whatever it is, and you're too aware of it. You're just doing the same thing too much.
That's it. And you know what? We'll get into that in a bigger way later on, but before we jump into Final Fantasy 16 stuff, I just want to shout out people who listened to the last two Wind Up podcasts where we broke down our top 10 games of all time, which ran like almost a collective 3 hours for two podcasts.
Yes, which is also one of our most successful episodes, if not the most successful episode.
That's exactly what I was about to shout out. I checked the analytics of it after it went up, obviously really recent, and it's our most successful both of them are our most successful episodes of the year so far. So thank you very much, everyone who listened to that and indulged our lengthy discussion on our top tens. And also thank you to the people who got in touch and sent through your personal top tens. Yes. They were a joy to read through as well. Just thank you generally for the response, because those were big recordings, like we said. And it's always nice when something that, because this is so rare, it's always nice when a piece of content that you enjoy, people enjoy as well, because that doesn't always happen.
No, and not related to that whatsoever. Please keep an eye out for my future Final Fantasy 16 editorial, which we'll be putting together in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, genuinely massive thank you for that. I think that only encourages us to do more stupid over-the-top rankings of stuff. Maybe we rank all the consoles.
Oh.
Maybe every single console. I mean, number one's PlayStation 2.
What I want to go back to, I want to go back to when we did our Is X the Best Year in Gaming? I think we did maybe 2013, or we both kind of came up with our
Did we do a separate list?
I think we've done one podcast where we looked back on 2013 and decided if it was any good, and then we did another podcast
is it any good?
where we both brought forward our candidates for the best ever year. But I kind of like the idea of just going back to years, looking at it in totality with all of this hindsight and asking, was it as good as we remember? Are there any hidden gems? Did we rate it accurately? Love that stuff.
I also wonder about ranking stuff that no one else will ever do, and ranking all the Devil May Cries, because no one's gonna, if not us, who?
Listen,
who's gonna do it?
I mean, that would have been perfect when I went through all the Devil May Cries a few years ago. Now they've all blurred into one. Devil May Cry 2, obviously the best. So, you know, put that number one.
I mean, that's absolute insanity, but I can't. I'm in this room with you for a bit, so I can't leave just yet.
Not yet.
Speaking of things that blur together, we should talk about Final Fantasy 16's lore. Not something that I agree with, but I think that the wider framing of that game, once you get past the second time jump, the one that goes about 5 years in the future, where you start leading the Hideaway and start becoming the new Cid, that's a whole thing that the game for me opens up massively. We're not going to do big plot spoilers. We're not going to do big things overall. But we are going to talk about Final Fantasy 16 in depth for now without bigger spoilers. We'll do a spoiler cast in the future.
Well, you've played how many hours? Like nearly 50, right?
It's over 50 now. When I hit credits the first time, it was 47. That was doing everything. It was all side quests, all hunts, everything. The only stuff I hadn't done were the specific like combat trophies where it's like, keep someone in the air and do these three moves or whatever. Did all them. And then I did all of the... there was some other combat trials I had to do that free up one of the items. You know, Clive has that bedroom full of stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's like different items. There was one thing I was missing on there, and you get it from doing all six combat trials. So I did that, and then I've only got to do a Final Fantasy, it's called Final Fantasy Difficulty playthrough, which is also New Game Plus, to 100% it.
So I'm not quite there yet.
Over 50 hours, my friend.
38 hours in myself. I'm in the back quarter of it. I've got a few main missions left to go, a few side missions. I've been kind of mopping up all the side missions and all the hunts as I go, so every time I go on a new mission, I'm always up to date with that. I feel like the end is in sight. Obviously, I'm not going to talk about it as a finished product, but I feel like I've seen enough of it now to understand the loops, understand the structure, understand what I like and don't like about this game. And man, it's been a long time since I've felt this conflicted.
Yeah, you do feel conflicted.
Had such complicated feelings about a video game because so much of it I really like, so much of it kind of bores me to tears.
Yep,
and
I thought it might.
Yeah, and coming at it as a non-Final Fantasy fan, we have pretty big differences, I think, on what we're getting out of the experience overall.
I want to break down the stuff that you don't like, and we'll do more of that in the spoiler thing, because obviously that'll become specific plot points and whatever, but I adore this game.
Yes.
This is like by far my game of the year. Nothing is even close to it. Like, it's one of those things where I love the combat mechanics. I love how much the different abilities they give you. I love how much you can build a really cool combat build that is so like experimental. I'm swapping out so many different abilities. I'm unlocking so many different things. I really love the combat. There was so many times where it started to click. And I do think it takes time to click. I do think it takes about 10 hours for it to click, to be honest, in terms of the getting enough icons to swap between and enough abilities and stuff. But I totally see why. And I forget the name of the dude, the DMC director they got in said it was his masterpiece, the Devil May Cry director, because I just love the way this thing plays. Like, even at hour 50, I can't get enough of it. I can't wait to do the New Game Plus thing.
Man, the combat in this game is the thing that I have the biggest and most complicated relationship with, because I agree with you in terms of the moment-to-moment combat and the amount of abilities that you have. Mm-hmm. You can make for some spectacular fights where you're chaining all of these abilities together. You know, you're knocking people into the air, you're bringing them back down, you're hitting off super moves, all of that great stuff. For me, it is, though, majorly let down by the enemy encounters.
Okay.
Because for as much variation as I can have in those combat encounters, I find myself just doing the same things over and over again, because the enemies I fight always attack in more or less the same way. Of course,
true.
Some of the enemies have different, you know, well, all of them have different moves, all of them have different combos, but to me, at least so far, 38 hours in, they're all countered in the exact same way, and I'm flying through the exact same rhythms in each combat encounter to maximize my damage output and get through it as quickly as possible. And that's such a shame, because there's so much potential there. I just personally don't find that I'm encouraged to experiment with it in those combat scenarios.
There's two things to this. One, I think that the hunts are where the combat variety comes in from the enemy standpoint, like that giant dragon that you can find. I think that fight's really cool if you've done that one.
Well, this is it. Really cool fights, but I'm talking about the same way that I approach that dragon is the same way that I approach like just a regular gang of enemies. That's my issue. Like, same tactics, more or less.
But I don't know, that breaks me, because I'm just like, well, all the different ways that it attacks you, there's so many different moves that you have to dodge in different ways, so many different like patterns that emerge on the floor, or like beam attacks that you got to dodge or whatever. Is that not differentiable enough?
It certainly made it a memorable fight. I'm just mean in terms of like, what am I popping off? Like, the dodges are of course different. This is what I was getting at, you know, when I was saying that all of the different enemies have different attack patterns and different combos, but ultimately I'm just dodging at different times to do the exact same attacks when I do get an opportunity to attack.
Well,
that's kind of what I'm struggling with, in a way. Like, I haven't been presented with an enemy that, you know, requires me to really fight them in the air, you know what I mean? Or
kind of
a shielded enemy that I need to get behind. There are some slight differentiables that you can get where, you know, a mage might give one of the enemies a shield, but they feel so few and far between that
they are.
Everything kind of feels the same, and that's...
I definitely would push back overall. The thing is, there are flying enemies. I love, when you knock something in the sky, or you're fighting a dragon or whatever, or, you're fighting a boss and they take off to the sky and you Phoenix dash up to them and, hang in the sky for a bit. I like that. But they do a weird thing with the difficulty in this, where the Final Fantasy difficulty is where all that stuff comes into it more,
right.
Where enemies are on higher leveled and they have more support enemies, which is in itself more of, a Final Fantasy trope, like an old-school thing, a turn-based thing, where one of a party is healing everybody else. You need to take that person out first and whatever. And they try and give you a bit of that in the main campaign.
Yeah.
But the things that I was getting at before in terms of loving the customization of it are from Clive's side forward, from the player side outwards. I love how varied that build is. Mm. So when you're saying you're doing the same stuff over and over again, I'm just why aren't you buying or swapping your abilities out or all that kind of stuff?
Because my issue is I was doing that obviously until I found a build, but now I have no incentive to swap the abilities out. It's purely for flair, you know what I mean? Because the damage output, I feel I've maximized that. You know, every single time I can get a stagger quick, I do 70,000 damage, and then I feel like they're dead, you know what I mean? So in my brain, I'm why would I swap out these abilities and try new things?
Because you're clearly not enjoying it.
They're not as powerful. No, I'm enjoying it enough. Mm. I'm not saying it's a bad combat system. Like I said, when I'm taking out a bunch of enemies at a time, I'm just talking about the repetition of it. And I don't think the onus should be on me to kind of make these fights less impactful in terms of the damage output, just because I kind of want that bit of variety. You have all of these abilities that you've given me, but give me reasons to use them.
That's true.
Because now all the game is prioritizing in my mind is how can you get this big enemy's health bar down as fast as possible? And then I'm that's damage output. So I'm going to focus on how I can stagger as quickly as possible and maximize my damage output. And I kind of feel I've found that. Mm-hmm. And then I'm okay, so this is the optimum way through fights. And there's a lot of fights in the game. Experiment now. My brain it's not compatible with my brain at the moment.
No, I had the same realization as you, where I was I can do a certain set of moves that I'll not spoil because some of them are spoiler based or whatever. But a certain set of moves that combo very, very well together. And I know that that will absolutely decimate an enemy. But at the same time, a few fights in, I was I am just doing the same thing. So I'm going to go in and I'm going to reset the points. And I'm going to because you can hold a button and just get all your points back.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make a new build or whatever. And then I'm going to approach it differently. That was a choice, but I'd love doing that.
Oh, I'm sure you do. Don't doubt that you do. I'm sure some players will.
But I had the same thing as you, where I was I don't want to just keep doing this over and over again. And I do agree, the enemies in the initial run should do more to break you out of it. Because they do pause combat to be hey, this guy's going to heal people. This guy's going to cast Protect or whatever. And it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Even if they cast Protect, you can just break through it anyway.
Yeah.
So I definitely agree with that they could definitely do more with it. I just mean that I think they give you enough options to refund points and respec and everything that I had that as an underlying thing of just I'm going to take it on. I'm going to change some stuff up.
My issue and the reason that I don't do that and I don't lower the damage output is because the pace of fights before I got to that kind of peak powers of Clive, that was the thing that was making me not want to play the most because the combat was fun. Mm. But I don't know about you. I guess you probably didn't. But I found the pacing of some of the fights really sluggish. There were so many of just some regular enemies if I was fighting a wyvern or like a drake which I'd fought 10, 15, 20, 30 times before. Uh-huh. I would be getting in those fights and just thinking, I wish I could run away from this because it was so lengthy. You know, I'd have to stagger them two or three times to get their health down. Mm. So that's kind of why I didn't want to change my build up because I didn't want to go back to that. It's either kill them as quickly as possible with the more straightforward build or go back to that kind of battle of attrition that I wasn't enjoying because I felt like the fights were a little too long. That's my main issue with the combat. And it's such a shame when I'm, there's some moments in the story where you're having these amazing icon fights and I'm just kind of looking at my watch thinking, I've been doing this a while. You know what I mean? This is getting a bit repetitive.
That physically made me feel sick.
Really?
That actually physically made my stomach do a thing, probably because I've only had 5 hours sleep. But, oh my God, the fact that you aren't loving every second of that, I think is definitely a big differentiator between me and you. Because you can talk about the pace of fights not being electric is something that I can't agree with at all. Because I'm Phoenix dashing between everything. I'm popping everything off. I'm putting a bunch of dudes in the air and catching them in midair.
Misconstrue me. Those group fights where you're fighting through a lot of fodder enemies really quickly, that's when it clicks for me. When I'm feeling powerful, I'm taking guys out with 5 or 6 hits. The pace of fights that I'm referring to is when you have those kind of
specifically the boss
sub-bosses and bosses where they, they kind of jump into the fray and it might just be you one-on-one bouts for what feel like forever with me. When we're in like the group fights and we're like almost doing Devil May Cry-esque, you know, zips across the battlefield and we're taking out those people, that's when it feels really great. That's when it feels electric and dynamic. It's just the length of and the pace of some of those one-on-one fights, to me, kind of brings everything crashing down.
Oh.
Only when I've fought them more than once.
Right.
And I think the game reuses enemies so much that it became an issue when I'm fighting something for the first time. Of course, it feels cool to master their moves, you know, do exactly what you referred to previously, figuring out when you can dodge, figuring out when you can attack for the first time through, amazing. Mm-hmm. When I've fought that same person 12 times, that's when I just think, I want to maximize my damage to get through this as quickly as possible.
I never felt like I was fighting anything of those really big enemies, because you get like a certain like big knights, or like you fight behemoths or like whatever. Like you get maybe two or three of them. I didn't feel like they were like exhaustive kind of thing.
Maybe just the way I'm playing, but I've got so much more of them. Like I said, so many drakes, so many of those big knights, so many of the fallen echoes that you fight. Or what's that kind of animal that... It's like lion-esque in nature, and it has like
the chimera.
Mm. Like I fought loads of those. I fought loads of the panthers. And it's
is that because you're exploring a lot, though?
Maybe.
I mean,
maybe.
That's fine. But
But like I was exploring so much, and when this started being a problem, I started skipping those fights.
Right.
You can unlock a method of transportation, let's say, that allows you to just kind of blitz past a lot of those. So I was definitely utilizing that the more the game went on. But I find that I fought so many of these that when I do a side mission, which obviously side missions are plentiful in this game, or even a main mission, and it throws one of those sub-bosses in. It kind of, I breathe like a sigh of frustration because the combat's great, but like I said, I fought this guy 20 times and I'm doing the same thing to shorten that period of time. It's like, I want to clarify that when I'm referring to this, I'm not saying this makes the combat system bad. I can still have a lot of fun with it, but over the course of nearly 40 hours now, I don't, for me personally, it's not sustained that length. If it was 12 hours, I'd be well in with you.
Yeah, I can totally see, and I think a lot of games have this, where it's like the idea is, okay, go build a combat build. Go find the best way to get through these fights and everything. Here's a bunch of different abilities that you can pick from, and then when you find that optimum build, it's then on the game to shake you out of that if they want to, like whether that comes from like enemy design or whatever it is, to sort of like make sure you don't, a comfort zone doesn't become like lethargic or something. And like it never did for me. Like I think I just enjoyed the, whether it's the visuals, the immediacy of the combat, like so much. And then if I got sick of seeing the same move or whatever, I would just swap it out, or I'd swap the icon altogether, because I think a lot of the icon abilities do change how you play. I think they do. I mean, the Titan one is entirely more defensive, like stuff like, Rama's whole thing where you can put like electric nodes on people, or you can set off a defense buff or whatever. It's nowhere near as in depth as other Final Fantasies, but I definitely got enough out of it where I was like, I'm the problem if I'm bored by this.
Again, my main issue with this, right, is that it was playing all the right notes. It was adding those icon abilities onto my previously established arsenal. So it never felt like there was a trade-off if I wanted to try something new, until you get the fourth icon in the game and says you can only use three of these at a time. You can only switch through three at a time. And that's when all of that variety came crashing down, because previously it was all additive. It was like, I've upgraded some of these abilities that can maximize this damage output, but then I'm getting new ones and I'm not losing anything because I can still switch to, you know, my Ifrit icon at a whim. When it came to the other ones you got after that three limit, I just wished that the game allowed me to switch through more, maybe four, maybe five, because there are ways to add powers from other icons to, the ones that you already have. But you have to master those abilities, which take a lot of experience points. And it just, that decision to cap it at three really did impact my progression throughout the game and my willingness to experiment, because it would feel like I was almost starting again if I was trying something new out.
The only abilities that I think are too expensive to master are the top level like cinematic ones, like the giant, like the tornado, or the giant like flame scorcher thing that Phoenix can do, or whatever. Everything else I had unlocked, like had mastered. I don't think they're that high personally.
Well,
and, like, I had them available to swap in. I also think in terms of like giving you three main icons and then like you'll have three sets of cooldowns to manage. Like that was more than enough to keep an eye on in the bottom right of the screen and queue up the next two moves and mentally be like, okay, this one's about to fill in the background, so I need to switch to that and then put that in there. And that was more than enough for me.
See, I wanted a little bit more. Right. And I suppose where we would differ in our play styles is you're focusing on everything but those big abilities with each icon.
Not necessarily, but I mean,
said, you just unlocked everything else.
Smaller ones.
The smaller ones. Uh-huh. Those are definitely affordable.
In terms of mastering stuff.
Yeah, totally. But I'm focusing on those big abilities. Right. You know what I mean? Like, popping off those big abilities are like integral to my combat experience, and that's the kind of way I was playing.
Oh, so
that's
this is
when it becomes more expensive, because like those are the big supers that I'm building everything else around. So investing in a new one is
thing with them, which is absolutely worth saying, is that you almost have to. They give you such like what should be big cinematic flourish finishes, but you can just equip them all at once. And I think that felt really weird to me. I was like, I don't want to be locked into these animations over and over again. I don't want to pop these in a row. And so I just didn't. I was like, I refuse to do that.
Yeah.
But like, if you're giving into that, then it's going to, I mean, I totally get that makes the game boring.
There we go. That's it. I think we found a nice little crossroads there, because that's the way I'm playing, because that maximizes my damage output. When I've got all of those upgraded, like I pop all three off in a row when one person's staggered, or to get them staggered, and it just like zips through these combat encounters. And I'm like, why would I ever? It's like saying to Goku in Dragon Ball Z, like, why would you stop being like Super Saiyan 4? Come down and do like the Kaioken or something. Yeah, you know? And I'm like,
I can only say, and I obviously believe this, that like if you are bored by those abilities, you have to change them yourself. Like I did. I was just like, I don't want to see these same three animations over and over and over again. So like, I just had to change it out of that.
Like I say, the core of it, the abilities I have an issue with, obviously you've just talked about them at length, but the core of it is the pacing of the fights, because it's like, I could swap them out, but then that makes those fights to me a little bit more boring, because I might vary what I'm doing. But if the fights are still lasting a long time, it's going to get to where I just think, I kind of want this to go.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, the different abilities that you combo together do result in bigger like damage outputs. Like, especially when you combine them with like certain things that you're equipping. Like maybe like gouge, you'll have like 10% more damage or something. So it's like, well, I'm going to have that on, but I'm not going to do that until I've done like pile drive, because that's the electric thing or whatever. So it's like, for me, comboing that stuff together did result in a greater overall damage output than just having one of the cinematic finishes, which kind of made me think like, oh, you're not supposed to have all of these equipped anyway.
Right.
Like, you're supposed to like build up to have like set the tornado off and then jump up and do everything in the middle of there with your other abilities or whatever. But like, I mean, that's like I remember thinking that at the very like nearer the beginning when you get like the fourth icon, or like when you got the third one and you now have three cinematic cutscenes to trigger, essentially, where I was just like, well, this is kind of boring. So like, I don't want to just do that. But then I would argue, and I haven't really gone back and done the specific number crunching, that I did get better damage builds by comboing more stuff.
Right.
At least that's how it felt.
That's it. I suppose we would never know, because I suppose if you didn't necessarily pop all of those off, like within the fully upgraded forms, perhaps, I don't know. Like, I guess it's, I'm sure we both got massive damage outputs, I suppose. For me,
I think either way, like,
seems so optimum, especially because I'm wearing like items for Clive that really reduce those cooldowns massively.
Right.
Like, it's shaving 12 seconds off, so I'm popping those off multiple times a fight, and it just rinses their health bars, man. And that's cool for me, because it means I'm getting through the game really quick now. But in terms of that variety in combat, my issue is that kind of the pacing of the fights, because that is preferable. That sort of rote, I'll do the same thing every fight, to me is preferable to, I'm fighting this guy for the 12th time and I'm going to have to extend the fight with a bunch of different combos.
Because you're choosing to play it in a way that you're not enjoying as much as you could.
But like I say, I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Because which
I
is the game's fault, like, obviously.
I wouldn't enjoy it the other way around, because of what I just mentioned there about like the slower pacing of the fight nature of it.
Yeah, I'm saying that you could find better damage output if you find other ways of comboing stuff together.
I guess we'll never know, because I wasn't obviously using this until a certain part of the game. You know, I spent 25 hours playing the way that you described, and I felt like those fights were taking a long time, and I was doing a lot of damage, but nowhere near the amount of damage that I was doing now, and certainly nowhere near the amount of stagger that I'm doing.
I hope like some super fan does crunch those numbers, because it is, I mean, like I said, I agree regardless that it is the game's fault that we have to have this kind of conversation on it, because it should be way more straightforward as to the way that, like, without having those sort of pitfalls where it's like, just trigger the three cutscene finishes and, you know, you'll burn through the fights. But yeah, I would hope that, like, it's like I said, someone crunches the numbers and kind of realizes that you are better off making a build, but then it's also the game's fault for giving you those finishes in quick succession.
And don't get me wrong, I've still got a build. Don't like misconstrue me and think that I'm like popping those three finishers and that's it, done. I still need to manage other things. You know what I mean? I've still got other abilities that I'm using. You know, I've got that wind-up move, which absolutely just knocks the block off any enemy when they're staggered. So it's like I am popping off other stuff. It's not just the three finishers done, three finishers done. It's just like that's the way I found to maximize the output.
Because
I think even if it's not true, the perceived damage that you're doing to me, like I said, just feels lacking otherwise, and it feels like the fights are going on a little bit too long in what's already a really lengthy game that reuses a lot of combat encounters and a lot of enemies, I didn't expect this, to be fair.
No, I mean, I don't know. I can only say I didn't really feel that it did. Like, I mean, you definitely fight two or three chimeras, because it's like there are a lot. There's two chimeras on the hunting board. There's a one, whatever. Like, there's some specific story encounters like that. But other than noticing, like you said, some of the fallen enemies where it was like the one with the two blades. Like, I'm fighting that a few times. There's a couple of behemoths, and like the chimeras. I don't know. Either I didn't mind because, like I said, it's not a JRPG. There's a lot of repeat enemies anyway. It was Final Fantasy specifically. There's a lot of repeat enemies anyway. Or I just didn't notice it.
Yeah.
And even then, I guess I enjoyed fighting them so much anyway that cool. But it is true that, like, regardless of anything, the fact that it has such a weird balance of, like, flair and it wants you to feel good, but they're almost prioritizing, like, look how this incredible graphics, look at this move that you're doing. But then they kind of just go, like, you can just do that over and over again if you want. It's kind of on the player to self-mediate their own output, which I did, but I absolutely can see that it should be the game making you do that, especially when they sow the seeds of that by saying, like, well, some enemies are going to put this status effect on, and you might have to think, oh, well, next time I'll not go into that fight with this ability or whatever, which is what all the old Final Fantasies did. And so, like, which is one of the biggest reasons that a lot of people, hardcore Final Fantasy fans, whatever, or people who aren't a fan of it, use that as one of the reasons of saying, like, oh, it's, you know, the combat could be so much better.
Yeah, that's it. You know, I just wish I had more to think about in the moment-to-moment gameplay that was beyond which abilities am I going to pop off when. You know, I wish I had to think about the enemies a bit more. I wish I had to consider status effects and kind of try to counter those in some ways. I wish I kind of had to consider my build before I went into a fight, is what I'm trying to get at.
Describing traditional Final Fantasy.
Well, there you go.
You might love it.
Well, I won't, because it's turn-based.
He's never going to play it, but
you know, if it had that kind of traditional... Well, it's why I love or really enjoyed the Final Fantasy VII Remake, because there was so much more to consider, but it had that immediacy of an action game.
Yeah, I also think, like, the way that they sort of, like, let you hold either square or triangle, you can do those charge moves as well, and like the parries and stuff. To me, there was always, although it is like a basic set of abilities, there was like enough there. Like when I'm always like, if I'm holding square, I'm then trying to like roll my thumb to like pepper with triangle, and then I let off square for the charged attack, or I'm charging a move whilst something else is playing out. Like it all kind of, for me, it all kind of like goes together, and I'm parrying. Even if you equip the Berserker Ring, you do a different type of dodge as well.
Oh, nice.
So it was like, I forget where you get the Berserker Ring from, but like, if you have that equipped when you do a precision dodge, Clive kind of like slides along the floor instead, and then you can come back in and do like a limited version of your limit break.
Ah,
and it's
cool.
Like, we should talk about the limit breaks, because them just saying like, hey, it's just a damage buff is kind of lame.
What is it usually?
When you click both the sticks in.
Yeah, what is it, a limit break? Regularly,
well, so limit break seconds in Final Fantasy history are just sort of, they're just always per character. Like, it was like I don't even know, like, different characters over the years have had different, like, some of them do wrestling moves, some of them have, like, specific melee finishes, some of them have, like, a mass heal, some of them, whatever, like, you know, maybe they cast all sorts of different protective spells all at once.
Okay.
They're always per character. And then the idea that, like, Clive's is, I mean, you get it in the story scene where it's, like, accept the truth kind of thing. But I put that on, I do a whole bunch of fancy moves and everything, but it is just a damage boost. Like, it could be so much more than that.
It worked for me enough, because I wasn't expecting anything else. Like, how many games have we played God of War, you know, when L3 and R3 is just the rage mode, for lack of a better term. Maybe. I mean, it's such an action game staple, isn't it? I mean, you get it in Devil May Cry, you get it in like a bunch of those spectacle fighters where you just kind of go into this mode where you can do extra damage, take fewer hits. So it was kind of what I was expecting, and without that Final Fantasy knowledge, really, or expectation of what a limit break is, I kind of...
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
If it worked, that's good.
I was expecting it to come, right, and then it arrived, and it didn't neither surprise me nor disappointed me, I suppose.
It would have been cool if, like, the limit break gave you, like, a whole extra bunch of abilities. Like, the things that you're kind of, like, wanting a little bit more of. Like, maybe you can dart around the field more. You can do more aerial combos. You can throw a dude into another dude or whatever it is. Like, something like that would have made you, like, cherish that. Because I always find that I queue up a whole bunch of different abilities. I try and combo them all together, and then I sort of put the limit break on top. It's like the icing on top. I'm like, well, I want to make sure that everything is there. It's about to pop off, it does so with as much damage as possible.
That's it. I mean, for me, I feel like a broken record on this podcast. For me, it's just about maximizing that damage output. Uh-huh. So my approach to every fight is stagger the beast, put my limit break on, attack, use all of the things that I have at my disposal, all the abilities, and just maximize that one stagger and try to get all the health bar out.
Which is what they want you to do.
Yeah, that's it, right? And I feel like that's worked for me, but it means that's really the only way I use it, unless I'm in, like, a group environment and I kind of want to take them out a little bit quicker. Then I might slap the limit break on, jump from enemy to enemy, and take them out that way, I suppose.
Yeah. I think that's, we'll revisit combat stuff when we do the full spoiler cast and things, because then we can talk about the abilities specifically, because I think for me, like, it was the specific icon abilities that, like, I think added quite a lot to it. It's weird as well, because I kind of wish the game pushed you more towards the combat trials, because they are icon specific, so you have to think about, like, what an entire icon build, like, how that does change how you approach stuff. I think that's just, it's more some of the end game stuff that you get that, like, does kind of whatever, like, change the way you approach stuff, even though the Titan one's pretty effective too. We should talk about, like, what this feels like to be your, like, I don't know, first mainline Final Fantasy or whatever, like, as a new story kind of thing. I know you were new to 7 Remake, but how are you finding it overall?
It's pretty good.
Story things.
This game is going to be on my Game of the Year list, right? I don't know where it's going to be on my Game of the Year list, but it's going to be in there. My issue with the entire thing is that everything it does well. It just reminds me of games that have done these things better. Like, combat, it works. It is enjoyable at times, but I'm kind of wishing I was playing a Devil May Cry or a Ninja Gaiden 2, you know? And it's kind of the same with the story. Like, I'm enjoying it, But like the rest of it, I just don't have that hook of I need to see what comes next. I really enjoy all the characters and I'm going to be very positive about those.
You can be as honest as you need to be. I'm definitely in the fanboy, oh my God, I love it. I love every second of it, oh my God, state.
This is it. Yeah. I wish I was there. It's just... It's a very good 8 out of 10 story and setting. I think it just, it started off so well, you know, with the stuff at Phoenix Gate, I thought was incredible. And it's reached high highs in terms of spectacle and action set pieces that have been very enjoyable to watch.
Oh, but my God.
I've never felt as invested in the story as I was in those opening hours. And I kind of feel like a lot of the really interesting themes it brings to the forefront, where I'm at now, it's kind of forgotten those and put them on the back burner a little bit and isn't necessarily, we'll have to save this for the spoiler podcast, but isn't necessarily interrogating the stuff I found interesting previously or kind of going in depth in the same way that it did, because like the start of this game, like I said, got me in so much, and now it's kind of become a not one-dimensional, but more one-dimensional version of what was there to begin with.
I can't wait until we can talk about this properly, because I absolutely massively disagree.
Amazing.
And oh my God, I can't wait for that conversation. But yeah, I mean, I think like the way that they sort of start things out, well, it's not spoilers for the whole game. We'll just talk about what's in the demo at the very least. I think anyone listening to this is playing it anyway.
You've already talked about the Sid stuff, so that's kind of
I just
spoiled.
Said that you like become Sid. Whatever happens with that. But yeah, I think in regards to like the way that they set stuff up, it's almost like this mystery narrative. You sort of have this thing of like what's happening, why is Ifrit and Phoenix fighting each other, what's Clive's role in that thing, who's the hooded dude, who's the man made of fire, what's all that stuff. And they shift gears pretty notably after that second time jump, which that was the bit where from then on in, where I think I said it before on a podcast, maybe I didn't, I was massively in from then. That was when I was like, I absolutely adore and love and cherish this, and I need to see every inch of it.
Yeah.
And it was the whole embodying the leader thing and looking after the hideaway and looking after the people and like what's next and where are we in this world and all that kind of stuff. And that's the stuff that I just massively fell in love with. So it's a weird thing, because I do think it's intentional how much they take their foot off the mystery narrative stuff. It's still there. It's still kind of in it's still the backbone of the game kind of thing. But it's doing so much more through its side quests and through everyone that you talk to and all their backstories and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That like, I was like, oh, you're playing a completely different hand than I thought you were. And like, and I grew to absolutely adore that. And I think that's what makes it the 5-star thing. But like, it's, you do have to go looking for it, but I do think that's the point.
That stuff, when I have found it, it's been good. Like I say, everything in this game is good. I want that extra level of that surprised me, that's hit me on an emotional level that I just sadly haven't quite had. But if I can talk about something I really do like,
yes,
and that is the world itself and the adventure feeling of traveling through all of these different towns, being on this big journey throughout this entire world. And that, I think they absolutely nailed. Every vista you come across is better than the last. There's so much lore surrounding that you can lose yourself in. So many interesting characters that pop up and remain memorable, even if they don't have that much impact on the overall story. Mm. That kind of... focus on being a person in a, you know, land much bigger than you and trying to, you know, go from point to point and seeing what's behind the next hill. I think that feeling is great, and it's even better considering it's not an open world game. There are open areas, but it's not like one big land you can explore freely. The way it ushers you through that world is definitely been the highlight for me.
I'll tell you what's weird with that is that like when you're on the world map, you can choose to drop into any of those obelisks, but then when you look at the local map, it is all of them connected.
Yeah.
Like it almost is an open world game, but then it's not because it's so corridor based. But then they also have other bits where it's just massive, huge expanses for the kind of just the sake of it.
Totally.
Kind of just areas to grind in. And they kind of feel, I mean, obviously, like the leadership team is from Final Fantasy 14, like it is Naoki Yoshida. Like those areas feel like MMO areas.
Yeah.
Which is like where you can see all the enemies roaming around, which is what Final Fantasy 12 started to do. And like, that's kind of like a whole thing.
But the whole game feels like an MMO, Scott Telford. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but from the side quests to the combat, the combat's obviously more involved, but you know what I mean? Yeah. It gives me an MMO vibe. The side quests, especially, give me. Giving MMO, and that is cool, but there's something about this being Final Fantasy 16 where I personally expected a level of detail and a level of variation that isn't necessarily there, but it doesn't detract from what you were mentioning earlier, that those side quests can be worthwhile from a story perspective. They continue subplots that you wouldn't otherwise get if you were just barreling through the main campaign and make that world feel more lived in than it would otherwise, even though they do a pretty good job of that in the main campaign anyway.
Yeah, yeah, no, man, the side quests are the thing in this game. Like, it's the thing that I've written and recorded a whole thing on why the game is genius. It is entirely because of the side quests.
Interesting. Tell me more without spoiling the video, please, because I don't know if I can. Oh, okay.
You should be there. If you're not feeling it, then it's not working for you. But okay. The detractors of this game that are just like, oh, I hate the side quests, they don't mean anything, you could not be more wrong.
Right.
Like, you're completely missing the point. If anyone's just sort of not even bothering with them at all,
yeah,
not even trying to see what they're getting at and like how they change over time and how like the characters that you encounter, how they change over time, like that's entirely the whole point of the entire game.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's just like, yeah, like it's right there.
I love that stuff. I just wish they were more involving from a gameplay perspective. Mm. I almost wish like sometimes they wouldn't have any gameplay at all because so many of them are like, fight these five bandits again that I've fought
it's
a million
so weird because
times. And the stories are great, but what you're doing sometimes feels like padding, other times feels authored and really well
done. It's a really weird thing, and I can get into this more when we can fully get into it, but I love the juxtaposition, the fact that all they need is you to just take a minute out of your god-fighting day to make sure they have a warm meal or to just make sure that they can actually like have a house or whatever it is. Because in that world, obviously, you have bearers, you have magic users who are hated, and there's a whole sort of metaphor for like racial divides or otherings or whatever it is. And it's like, I love that they paint that world in so many different ways that says like, oh, all the gods are warring, all these wider, massive environmental factors are going on, but this person just needs somewhere to stay. And can you just take 5 minutes to just make sure they're okay? And like, and I think all that is the whole point of that entire game. And it's like that it comes through the most in the most mundane stuff.
I also love that in theory, man. Like, I love what it's trying to do with those side quests. Like you said, you know, you are Sid in this situation, and you're not only on this massive journey, but you've also got to put the work in at the ground level, make sure the people that you're saving have a life enjoyable enough to lead. Like, that's great. I just wish the presentation was a little bit stronger, because I don't think I can personally get away from the fact that so many of those missions are walk around this place, press X on one person, press X on the other, and then Clive will hand them something off screen that you don't see, and then that's kind of game over. If they were a little bit more involved or maybe had that bit of detail to
some
it,
of that stuff
I wouldn't
is like
mind so much.
Yeah, which is so funny because so much I noticed that stuff, but it's just so baked into every JRPG.
Yeah, like, I bet, yeah.
As soon as JRPGs went 3D and started doing side quests, it is just how do we get around having to animate this? Like the Yakuza games to this day, obviously Like a Dragon Now, will just fade to black and come back up again.
Yeah.
Like if they need to do anything other than just the characters talking to each other, if someone gets attacked, it'll just fade to black. You'll hear like a punch noise and then someone will be holding their head. Like I've largely just completely accepted that, but that's a whole other thing about, I guess, the economics of animation. Do I really need to see that or whatever it is?
That's interesting, man, because that's that kind of extra layer is the only thing holding those back. Again, what a stress. Those missions are still good and still worth doing. I just think they would hit more for me if I had that little extra level to it, and if I wasn't kind of filling in the blanks, because again, it almost feels like I'm playing an MMO in that regard, where I'm doing a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of imagining what's happening. But what I'm really doing is pressing X on this person, X on this person, then it's quest over, and we get the cool tech story. That's about it. Yeah.
That's definitely true in terms of like the utility, what you are doing as a player. Like you're holding a button to interact, maybe you do a combat encounter or something. But I just think it's written so well. I think the script of this game is phenomenal. There are bits, I mean, you should have had quite a lot of it where it's pretty well written at this point. Like you're pretty far through.
This is it, pretty well written. That would be my assessment of it without slagging it off too much. Pretty well written, not amazingly written.
I think, it's one of the things, we'll get back to it when we do like more spoilery stuff. I don't think the main villain is especially well written, even though I like what they're getting at with that thing. But it's just, it's one of those things where like the way that they paint their world and how much they commit to a certain message that like kind of like comes through as you get through it. I ended up just absolutely loving it. I was like, oh, it permeates everything and I absolutely love it. But what do you think of Clive as a character?
I think he's good.
He's a husky
again,
man.
Like, I'm going to use that phrase so much in this podcast. I think he is good.
Right.
I don't think he is amazing.
Right.
I like his characterization. I like his voice acting. He's not a character I'm going to be thinking about in 5 years' time. You know what I mean?
Okay.
But I'm enjoying it for while I'm in this entire game. I'm enjoying while I'm in there. I'm just not thinking about it when I'm not playing it.
They do. They try and walk such a line with him where you think about, like, I guess you don't have the reference point for this, but you think about previous Final Fantasy protagonists. It's nearly always been a near mute protagonist. Actually, as I say that, I'm kind of just thinking more of who he reminds me of, which is Squall from Final Fantasy VIII.
Okay.
And he talked and stuff, but he was like a very, like, I'm brooding and I've got the world on me. And it's like that. I mean, Ben Starr's a phenomenal voice actor. Like, when he's just talking, then he shifts into Clive mode. It's great. And I love his performance. I do really like Clive, but they try and walk a line between, like, you're a video game character, you're a video game protagonist, you're walking this, they are walking this line between MMO and live action action game. And then also we need to have all this emotional investment. And you get that in the opening, like you said, where it's at its one of the strongest points where he's like freaking out over what's happening with Joshua.
Yeah.
And he's really, Brendan Starr's like giving it all in the booth.
So good. So yeah. Good.
Like one of the best performances of the year or the generation. And there are other moments like that too. But they almost, I think it's intentional, have that trade-off where like his work becomes him and all he is a utility to do something else. Because they have really big scenes about, like, is he actually taking care of himself?
I'm trying to phrase why I think what I think without spoiling things. And the general, I'll talk to you more about this when we come up there because I want to go into detail. My main issue with these characters is that they all have an amazing starting point. They all have that one bit of backstory that makes you want to know more. I've just found with all the characters, I've never gotten to know more. They are defined by, like, a big event, and they have a very solid characterization, but they exit the story. Clive obviously doesn't. Clive's throughout. Right. They exit the story, or they exit their development in the arc at a certain point, and that's kind of like all they are, which is...
I'll give you that for Jill.
Yeah, that's definitely... Well, I don't want to name a bunch of characters, but there's like... I got it the same feeling with Titan and...
Really?
Okay. I know that's the dominant. That's
Hugo Kupka.
Yeah, he's probably the best so far, but even then I kind of felt like there could have been more to do with that character that they haven't done so far.
You'll see to some degree.
Same with, like, Clive's relatives, a few of which you see throughout the game, including his mother. Mm-hmm. I thought, like, just as her story was getting interesting, they kind of just drop it. And there was a few times where it has done that, where... There's so much potential in the story and some of the other themes that we'll touch about in the spoiler podcast where it's a great starting point. I was just always after more. I was always after, like, a twist or a turn in their development, and I never quite got it. Especially with Jill, who, you know, you have an entire mission surrounding her backstory and why she is the way she is right now. But then since then, I've kind of felt like, we've not done much else with you, Jill. And the same with Clive. You know, Clive has that great first couple of hours before the time jump. And I felt like who he's been after the time jump has been way more consistent and has had way less development than he had in the first 10 hours or so, which
I think is intentional because like he's so lost, like after everything that happens at the beginning, and then he's just put into like slavery servitude as one of the whatever you call that initial group of military that he's part of. And then obviously like Sid's influence is what shapes him because he needs that sort of guiding light because of what happens with his own dad.
Yeah.
Like I would say like that's entirely intentional. You're meant to feel that change in gears when you have the 5-year jump.
Absolutely. Oh yeah, 100%. I don't disagree. Like I said, the development across the first 10 hour period until that point is amazing. When you get that change, it makes sense because of what's happened before. I just feel like since then he hasn't had anywhere near that same propulsion. Maybe it's because he's defined as who he is.
Yes.
And maybe that works for a lot of players, but considering I've spent 27 hours with him since then and he hasn't changed much he hasn't shown much of a development. That's my issue with it, where I'm like, you've got all this great stuff and it's really good. Again, it's really good. It's just you have the potential to kick it into next gear and I don't know. I feel like they took the foot off the pedal with all of these arcs.
No, it's definitely the thing that I just said about him becoming his own work, and they have a scene that directly addresses that, like to try and walk that line of almost being metatextual about it and just saying like, hey, we recognize that we've made a video game character out of our human, and then try and grunt. I think you've had that scene. You should have had. But we can talk about it more in the spoiler stuff. But it's like, yeah, I think they're trying to walk those lines. For me, they massively work, and I think it's great. But like, it's not going to work for everybody. In general, though, like I think that it is. I kind of love that it's massively divisive to a degree
too,
because I think there's so much to talk about. And because I had all the words muted on Twitter for like the last sort of 2 weeks, it was funny coming back out of that because I had everything muted, every permutation, every character, everything. So I didn't see anything on social media for the Final Fantasy 16 discourse, to give it a word. And it was funny unmuting all those words and being like, oh, people are massively divided on this thing.
Right,
and then like
yeah.
looking at like Japan's sales and how it's like a 90% drop off in the week after, but it's only boxed sales and it's like that whole thing. Square Enix still seem to be happy with its progress and they're like notoriously hard to please with stuff. And it's like the fans, like if you like it, you tend to absolutely effing love it. And so I'm seeing a lot more of that on social media. But then every now and then I'll see a post of someone just saying like, but this didn't work, and this kind of drags it all down, and whatever. And I think we'll end up landing on both those sides. Because where you are now, when I was there, I was wide-eyed in love, crying at how beautiful it was. Like, I couldn't get enough of it at that point.
Which is what I want. Don't get me wrong again. Like, that's what I want to be doing. And I think the frustration comes from the fact that I'm so open to loving this game. It's not usually something I would go for in terms of aesthetic or setting or narrative, but I was so open to it and I wanted to love it so much. And the fact that it hasn't got that hook in, I know I'm asking a lot. I'm asking for something to be a 5-star experience or a 4.5 star experience that really hooks into me. But because of its compelling start and because of how much promise it showed, I am a little bit disappointed that I only think it's good and don't think it's, you know, amazing. It hasn't converted me to a Final Fantasy lifer, you know what I mean?
Not a lifer. I remember you saying the other week that you were more into Final Fantasy now than you have been before. So
absolutely.
I guess it's done a bit in that direction.
Sadly, not as much as Final Fantasy VII Remake did. Mm. This is making me weirdly more excited for that game. It's a funny one, man. I'm so excited to look into the reviews and stuff once I've finished the game myself, because it does so much right. It does so much right, including the icon battles, which are amazing and huge and so well presented visually. But I feel like every time I start to love it, it'll throw something up and make me think, oh, I wish I was playing this. I wish I was playing that instead.
Right. The icon battles are the kind of things that, there's a specific Outer Worldly clip that's being shown quite a lot at the minute in terms of just a bit where they absolutely go for it in such a ridiculous degree. And there's a lot of Dragon Ball Z and full on anime over the top shenanigans going on, which like, the last time Final Fantasy did that was probably in the animated movie Advent Children.
Yeah.
And people were like, okay, I don't know. Like, you're doing it with the Final Fantasy VII cast, so we'll be okay. But, like, it's kind of crazy. And then now they're just like, hey, what if you just did this crazy stuff? And it's just like, it happens earlier on. The first time it gets really stupidly over the top, it does involve Titan. And it's like, there's like a rap song comes on underneath that it's like really over the top and everything. And I was like, man, I can feel this dividing people. You can feel the people who would peel away from that being like, it's too much. I can't stand this.
It has been beautiful. I loved playing it without that context because I'm like, I have no frame of reference for that. And I'm like, it felt like a natural escalation of what they'd previously established. So I was like, well, I'm already all in. I wouldn't have even registered that as something different. If I didn't have you to soundboard off, you know what I mean? If I didn't have you to provide that context.
It's definitely like at the very beginning when you have the Phoenix Ifrit fight at the very, very beginning, that is in itself a massive escalation. We've never seen two icons on screen at the same time, apart from like at the very end of Final Fantasy IX. And even then, the idea of like doing like a full playable battle is the first thing you do in the game. Like that is Naoki Yoshida and the rest of the team like doing a proof of like mission statement kind of thing. Like, this is, we're going some direction with this to steer into that stuff. Anything else that comes to mind that you want to touch on?
No, I feel like I've been really negative, but I want to say
that honest.
Those icon battles are really amazing, and there are some visual set pieces that occur in the back half of the game that are spectacular, and while I won't remember the characters necessarily, I will remember those moments that they were involved in. I will remember those
visuals.
The man
on a horse.
I will remember where I was when I did some of these boss fights, which are absolutely amazing. It's a game of two halves for me, which is a shame, but let's not end on my tepid what would I even describe it as? Tepid positivity. I want to know what you really loved about it, Scott, before
go into the stuff that I love the most, because it revolves around where it goes. It revolves around what happens right. I mean, it just revolves around what the game means, but that comes from knowing the story and everything holistically. And that's the kind of thing that we'll get to in the spoiler cast. But yeah, I mean, if I talk about where I was, like about halfway through where you are, or like 3/4 of the way through, I was just loving the feeling of being Clive, being the next Cid, whatever, and just what that felt like. And then the as it all kind of clicked in, when you meet Byron, like your Uncle Byron, and he's just sort of like, fetch me my cutlass and let's go on this grand adventure and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, yep, this is some old school Final Fantasy stuff. This is a traditional grandiose kind of like almost balletic or operatic approach to, if a stage play was playable, it's like this big grand thing. And I just love that there's a grandiosity to Final Fantasy that nothing else nails.
I want to end on a positive. I agree.
You're gonna ask me who's Byron.
The grandiosity is unbelievable. The scale of this game is crazy. Those cutscenes are so well directed. Uh-huh. I would rather watch the movie of this game.
You should watch
this game. I think. Yeah. My core opinion of this game is just every kind of thing, from the story to the combat to the world to the RPG mechanics. It's just like, it doesn't have that extra level of detail that I, for whatever reason, expected from a mainline Final Fantasy game. I expected, at least in one of those areas, for it to have the sense of, you know, mechanical innovation that I would expect out of a Naughty Dog game or a Rockstar game. Not across the board, of course, you know, but in terms, in one aspect more than the rest. But I kind of feel like all of those pillars just, I've seen them done better elsewhere, and there isn't necessarily one for me where I go, that's the thing the game excels in.
It's one of those things where we'll just have to revisit it, because I think the combat model's phenomenal. I think the amount of world detail, the lore, the amount they commit to just giving you the full history of Balistair, and like that only then reinforces everything you're doing and what that means, and then how that plays into what happens towards the end of the game and whatever. So it's like, I think all that stuff stands out. But those are more spoilery discussions. I definitely agree that there's a lack of depth in regards, if you compare it to other JRPGs or other RPGs in general, when it comes to the items that you're equipping, or when you're thinking about your build outside of the abilities that you're equipping, it's very straightforward with that. It's like, smith this sword because it says +2 and you have the ability. Like, that stuff is very straightforward, which is weird because it's then intentional, because there's loads more items and crafting stuff and things to unlock in the new game plus Final Fantasy. And it's literally called Final Fantasy mode.
Yeah.
Like, they want you to go through this and have this more straightforward, just have fun with it approach, to then open it all up, like what Final Fantasy VII Remake's hard mode was, where it was completely different in terms of how MP was handled and everything, which is fascinating, because it's like, I definitely appreciate that, and I'm going to go through that more than once, but they're gambling that people will want more, and they have a lack of trust in just leading with that Final Fantasy mode straight away, and I think that's interesting.
I wish I had that. I wish I had that kind of level of complexity that I'm not quite getting. I think,
and it's in the game, but they could have led with that.
Yeah. Assumably, totally. Anyway. I think everything they do, if it was bolted onto a true RPG, like Witcher style RPG, where your choices really matter and you have a lot of things to do in the open world, and the side missions were a little bit more complex in terms of what you're doing and the choices you can make with them, I think I'd have been way more fine with it. I think it's because it's lacking that RPG depth that I'm scrutinizing those core pillars, because, you know, I don't criticize The Witcher 3 for not having Devil May Cry style combat. You know what I mean? I don't criticize it for not having Naughty Dog style animations, but it's because it has that RPG core to it that those other studios can't replicate, that I don't mind so much and don't scrutinize as much. Final Fantasy 16 doesn't have that for me, which is why I'm more scrutinous of it, I think.
Which is funny, because Witcher 3 is obviously a more in-depth RPG overall. Like you said, it's more about narrative, story choices, character writing, etc. But in terms of my Geralt build, I didn't care about that at all.
Nope.
Whereas I care way more about my Clive build as playing a role in combat than I did for Geralt, other than unlocking the pirouette ability in Witcher 3. That was the only thing that changed combat for me.
This is what I mean. I agree. Like I said, like, the combat in Final Fantasy 16, way better. Way better than the combat in The Witcher 3, but not good enough to make me think about what I am perhaps missing or what could have been. That's all I would say about that, because, obviously it's got a way better combat system.
No, I think overall I kind of love that we embody what is emerging as the sort of two sides on Final Fantasy 16. Like, you either totally vibe with it and you absolutely love, like, all the various things that it's getting at and they work for you, or it is, like, the corners they cut to, like, highlight those things are just, it's too obvious. Like, they streamline it too much, and I absolutely see that. I just think that the stuff that it does is so great, but we can get into more of that when we do, like, spoiler stuff.
Hell yeah.
Because this has been the wind-up. I didn't do an intro, but I'll do an outro. I've been Scott Tilford. That's been Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you throughout the week.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.